Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Do you want to introduce, or do you want to start by, remember where you're saying hello to me, we're going to introduce, excited about who we've got today. Okay, you ready?
Good morning, Amelia. I was going to call you Melania.
I don't know what you were just about to say there.
Melania. I must be fucking watching too much Donald Trump stuff. And how's it going?
Good. Cool. We're excited about our guest today.
Yeah, we are. We have Mr. Dennis Hogan here on the other end of the camera.
Hi, Dennis.
How's it going?
Hello, guys. How are you going? Yeah, I'm very good. Thank you.
Do you find when you speak to Irish people that your accent becomes more Irish? Because I find mine does.
Well, I'm so used to being slag. So because I was saying hello there, I actually cool it down a little bit because I was sure if I had just said, how you going, Mitch, whatever, you would have went. So I'm more conscious around Irish now.
We've often had this conversation. I know we'll get to. Amelia wants to put your head. We've had this conversation a few times. Whenever Irish people hang up the fucking phone to each other, right? How they hang up the phone. They go, "Okay, yeah, no worries. Okay, goodbye, 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 goodbye."
Your dad does that a lot.
I've never met any other person. Like, we were just on the phone earlier on. And as you get off the phone, you went, okay, yeah, okay, no worries. Yeah, goodbye, yeah, goodbye, 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 goodbye.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's an Irish mental disease or...
No, I think it's for fear of it not saying enough goodbyes. The other person thinks that you were short with them.
Because
if you're angry with someone in your Irish, you say, right, goodbye, and you'll hang up. I don't know, it's crazy. We're just a crazy weird people.
Because I think if you get off the phone and you've only said one goodbye, you get off the phone and you think, Bollocks only said goodbye once. he didn't say goodbye 30 times.
Anything less than 10 means he doesn't give a shit about me.
So listen, you know we always start this off with your favourite song.
What's your current favourite song?
What's your current?
I wonder if it's a kiddie one that you're having to listen to with your two little girls.
No, there's actually. So right now, it always changes for me. Although I've got a lot of nostalgic ones that I love back from the 90s, of course. But there's one, Get Out of My Head. It's actually from an Irish guy who made it over throughout the pandemic. Yeah, and it's funny you asked that because I didn't even know the song before I had heard it on the radio, and it was about a guy who was doing something that he didn't like in college, and he was just pursuing it, and eventually he just said, you know what, I'm not doing this anymore, I'm going to do what I love, music. He made a song and now it's a massive hit. Wow. So it's called Get Out of My Head. It's a very good song. It's a real disco song. It's good.
That's good. You like a bit of disco in our lives?
I haven't heard it, so I was. Can you give us a bar? Just a quick bar, honestly. Just a quick bar.
You like putting people on the spot with that, don't you?
Yeah,
especially Dennis.
He's setting the trap like he has for me many times.
Do you know it's so funny though? You know, I can speak in front of lots of people, but you ask me to cook dinner and I wouldn't do it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You can box. I couldn't do that to save my life, but ask you to sing a song and you're like, no. It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Actually, speaking of funny Irish things, you remember we were in STP and we got everybody to do that, all the Irish people.
Jig.
We got everybody up to do the Irish dancing. That's not a bad point to remember. That was a really funny, funny thing. We haven't put that up in a long time. We should put it back up.
There was something else you made me do too as well, which I actually did. I still to this day can't believe I did it, but we'll leave that for another conversation.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Wow.
Anyone who's done STP will know what we're talking about.
Oh, man.
Take a moment.
So listen, you've just come out of... look, let's talk a little bit first off about how we met. We'll do it briefly. How did you?
Because anyone who's listening can actually go back and listen to our old.
Yeah. So do you want to do it briefly?
Of course.
So just give us a brief overview of how you heard about us, Dennis, and we'll take it from there.
Well, look, I had a 23 fight winning streak as a professional boxer, and you know, even as an amateur boxer, it took me 10 years to win an Irish championship, even though I was far better than that. And I always found that anything in my life that came to me always came to me the long way around. And I'd always wondered, I used to wonder, you know, was I self-sabotaging or what was going on, or was it a mindset thing or what was happening? And just at that very time, I was standing outside the shop. It's only about half a kilometer from here. And I just had a quick browse on Facebook while Bradeen was in the shop. And it was someone had liked a video of your Bridging the Gap. Which was So I just had a quick look at that. And, you know, even 2 minutes into what you had said there was already, I was starting to go, I feel like I need to listen to this. So I went home, sat down with Bradeen in the sitting room, and we listened to the, I think it was an hour video back then, but I think you've now conduced it down to 40 minutes or even less. But everything you said just resonated. And I said, like, at that time, I had very little money, I had very little resource, everything. But I knew that what you were saying was what was happening for me. So I got online, had a coaching call. The coach online verified some stuff with me that I had thought was happening for me. And for right or wrong, I just booked in to your first seminar. And that's how it all started. So that was the mastermind. That was the relationships in New Zealand.
Yeah, that's really where it all happens, So look, you've just, let's talk a little bit about the past 2 years. So can we start with the mindset? So you had a shift, things started to head north, and you've just come out now the other side of the Chizu fight, where you've had a loss, and I just want to talk about what you feel. Let's talk about Mungaya, what the mindset was going in there, and where you're at, how you're handling this, because most people would think, Jesus, this chap must be devastated or defeated and that sort of stuff. I'm your mindset coach. I talk to you as often as I possibly can. And let's talk a little bit about where you're at inside of your head. We'll start with the Mungaya fight and let's move forward to where we are now and what the plan is. What's the plan?
Well, I mean, you want me to
Start with Mungaya. The Mungaya.
Okay. Let's do three things on that one.
Okay. Oh, no. Like, that's okay, because, you know, you'll see a few patterns in this, I reckon. Like, for the Mungaya fight, I worked my way to number one in the world, number one mandatory. And, you know, within boxing, they play the game. So we actually thought that we'd be able to get the fight with Mungaya on neutral ground. But the game that they played, they actually got me. I won't go into it, but, you know, if anybody ever wants to ask me, I could give you the 10-minute story of how they played a game that they ended up getting me to Mexico to fight the Mexican in his home place. So anyway, listen, I didn't let that get in the way of it happening. I had to do it or I was going to lose my mandatory position. I did not want to originally do that because the odds are stacked against you completely. As we've seen on the night that I went over, and I knew in my heart that I could outbox this guy. Didn't know in my heart I'd get the decision. And every time I did media for Australia, all over the Irish papers, everything, they're all like, Dennis, you're a heavy, you know, outsider because of the fact that you're having this in Mexico and everything else. And I just said, look, I'm just focused on getting the win and winning and everything else. And look, on the night, it was clear to the whole world. That I'd won the fight, but they did not give me the decision.
It was actually an amazing fight, and I remember prior to you going out there, I remember watching Mungaya, and I was thinking, "Fuck, this guy can hit, my God!" But I remember I remember having a conversation with you, and you had a giggle with me, and you're like, "Don't worry, I'm going to take this guy." And when you went out there, you clearly beat him. But when you came home, and I mean, you started to tell me some of the things that they'd done to your team, you know, to stack the odds against you, the fact that he was able to look at the scorecards, which is a fucking just a no-no. Am I winning?
That's on YouTube.
Like, it's just, and that's, you can see them doing that, which is just clear cheating. I mean, that's just, most people might not want to say it, but the WBO, you know, have a lot to answer for in terms of that fight and what they allowed to happen, because it was clearly disgusting. And you made a very important point at the fight. You said, in the ring, you said, this is very bad for boxing, because it's very bad for the young kids that are coming up through the ranks that want to become, you know, a belt holder, a strap holder. And, you know, that's, they're working their asses off towards doing that. And then you have this sort of thing happen when you, now I saw the Mexican people were so fucking behind you. This is nothing to do with the Mexican people. They were behind you. They saw that you beat him. It was, you know, it was really disgusting what happened out there.
Well, I mean, my family and people that were there to support me actually got a standing ovation by all the Mexican people leaving the arena, which is absolutely phenomenal. And even when Munguia posts to this very day, his own Mexican people are posting, you know, you need to fight Hogan again and Hogan beat you. You need to do this, that and everything else, which, you know, I'm getting on with my life. But, you know, on a weekly basis, I'm getting dragged back to his posts and being reminded of that. But again, like I said, like I balanced it out and I said, right, let's move forward.
I was going to ask that, Dennis, how did you do that? Like what happened
say in my head. It's a good question, because all I had to say in my head was, is this going to be my story, or is the story about the man who overcame it and came back to win even greater again? And so that's what led us on to the next fight, was that I then got the opportunity, because I had such a great performance and the whole world had seen. And even when I was in Vegas for my last camp before Christmas, I was like, you're the guy who beat Munguia. Like, you know, that's how I'm known right now. And, and I'm going to change that. But I was given the opportunity to step up to middleweight and fight Jamal Charlo, who is an absolute monster in the division. At first I was like, right, well, you know, you don't really want to be doing this, going to middleweight, fighting a guy who's the size of a light heavyweight. And if anyone goes back and wants to look at it, Hogan versus Charlo, just look at it and see the size difference. But apparently 10 people had said no to fighting him at that point. And you know, for me, this was the opportunity to get the world title, and the money was really good. But essentially, on the night, it was my first time to be stopped. It was stopped in the 7th round. He hit me quite good, and I was on my feet, but I wobbled a bit, and the referee called a halt to the fight, which he was right to do. And then it was like, right, okay, so you know, what do we need to do now to get back to my number one position, back in my own weight? And then obviously the pandemic kicked in. Well, first off, I started the year and I had to have knee surgery because of how much I trained for that fight. My body was still... it was still in a bad way after that, and I had to have knee surgery and stuff like that. But the pandemic was good in the sense that my body got to freshen back up again from all of that. But it did start a run of inactivity, which then led us to we were lucky. I thought I was blessed. I was getting to finish the fight, getting to finish the year last year with a world title eliminator with former unified world champion Julian Williams. So I was in Las Vegas. I'd arrived. I was there for 7 weeks, and then we find out he has tested positive for COVID.
Yeah, which is, at the end of the day,
like how soon to the fight was that?
Fuck off! I mean, honestly, it's like at the end, it was just nonsense. At the end of the day, I mean, because something happened. You were out there in the gym training, right?
Yeah.
And something happened. Can we talk into that or not?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
So because he turned up at your training,
he turned up
with an entourage.
Yeah.
Walked in.
So what goes on is, I'm told by PBC, right? You're fighting Williams.
So just say who PBC is. Just say who that is. PBC.
It's called Premier Boxing Champions. It's like there's the four big promoters in the world. Golden Boy, who I fought Munguia, was one. PBC, who I fought Charlo with, is the other. But so these are PBC. They were giving me another fight, so I had a 2-fight contract with them. Charlo was one, and then this was going to be the next one. Was going to be a title eliminator. How good! So that's all good stuff. But the thing about PBC was, it's like until they announce it, you're not allowed to say an absolute word about who you're fighting, right? And they do this so then they can leak things and put it out at the right time and everything else, which is really a pain, because I went over to America to start work with my new head coach, former world champion Wayne McCullough. And so I'm in the gym training with him. Only him and me know who I'm going to be fighting. The owner of the gym doesn't know. So then Williams obviously decides, him and his team decide to come to Las Vegas and train also, because it's not far from where we were meant to be fighting. And all of a sudden, because they can't tell him either who they're fighting, I'm standing there, I'm after sparring, and I'm in my gear. It's actually a little bit cold in Vegas, and I'm standing there with a hoodie on, after having a shower, standing there with a hoodie on and my bag, and they all start to pile in. People are going, Williams is coming in. I'm like, Williams, that I'm fighting? They're like, yeah, he's just after driving in. There's two cars there. About 10 guys walk into the gym, and I'm just standing there, and I'm looking up at the ring, and they're just kind of behind me. And then at one point, I look back, and I catch, I think, one of his coaches, one of his entourage in the eye, and they kind of look at me like this, and I'm like, I'm just smiling, and I look back towards the ring. And then one of them walks up beside me, but we're wearing masks, and I'm like, it looks like Williams. I don't know if it's Williams. At the time, I thought it might have been Williams, but in retrospect, or in hindsight, it probably wasn't him, because their entourage do everything for them. But someone came up and stood beside me for probably about 30 seconds. They just turned around, went back and left the gym without even saying anything.
Right.
So I just felt that was a little bit, you know, it was a bit weird, but not to worry. You know, the fight was still going ahead, apparently. Mm. And then all of a sudden, about a week or two later, he has COVID, and I've asked for a positive result of whether he had COVID or not.
So people know what that means is that you said certified that he's got it. It shows from the doctors that he has actually got COVID.
I'll ask, and then the next time I asked, the second time wasn't produced. The third time I said, I'm going to need that now, or else I'm going home. Like, this is you got to do this. And plus, you know, give us a new date, or at least give us something. You know, I'm not sitting in a hotel in Vegas over Christmas with no new fight date or no new nothing. And I was getting absolutely nothing. And I trained again. One of the most heart-wrenching things you'll ever have to do in your life is train for another week as hard as you can, paying sparring partners, doing all of this, while you're being told absolutely nothing. Mm. And then eventually it was like, right, my team was just like, yeah, you just got, and Wayne was saying, you just got to get home now and try to salvage some part of Christmas with your family, because you're getting absolutely nothing here. So there was
something you said to me when that happened. You say there's a type of training fatigue or a time fatigue that occurs, because it's not just an in the ring game is what I think I want people to know.
Yeah,
it's a very psychological game that happens outside of it, which is all based on money, which is all based on who's going to win, who's going to win. Can you talk into that?
I will. But again, I'll just take it back to my first world championship fight, which was in Germany. And I was there. We were in Ireland and I was sparring. I was boxing on my skin. My coach had just said, you know, this is great. I cannot wait to see your last spar. You've really lifted the game here. I trained harder than I'd ever trained. And in the meanwhile, they had sent me a 24-question sort of interview to answer. And they were trying to intimidate me, you know, because again, you know, boxing is warfare. And they asked me questions, and I'm always very honest, but they had said, how do you think you're going to beat Jack Colquay, right, in Berlin, on his 30th birthday? Apparently that was meant to, the 29th September, 26th September was meant to be his 30th birthday. He was going to fight on it. And I messaged back and said, I had just spent time training with Daniel Giel, and he had won two world title fights in Germany. So I was playing the game. I was like, I'll just throw it right back at you.
Right.
Yeah. I'm full of confidence. And I let them have it, like, pretty much in terms of how confident I am and everything else. Within 5 days, we got word, Coach pulled me aside and said, like, he thought I was going to take it a lot worse than I did, but they're after postponing your fight. And I said, well, what's the new date? Oh, they're not giving us a new date, so we pretty much have to arrange to go back to Australia again. So we had to fly back to Australia, and because they weren't giving me a date, they didn't give me a date till 3.5 weeks till before the fight. 4.5 weeks before the fight. So I had to keep training. And the next thing, all of a sudden, I overtrained. And then I fly back again to Australia. But he hadn't even left Germany once. Mm. And it was all, you know, and then all of a sudden, I come back and have like a piss poor performance from a first world championship fight. But in terms of me overtraining, like, I should have pulled right back and not overtrained. But that's just the way they did it. And that's all the way it happened. And I didn't know, but I learned a lesson from that. Mm. So again, these are the games that they play. And for this one, again, you know, when he rocked up and he seen me already in Vegas, you know, out from the fight, already there with a, you know, all of this. He, you know, instantly they're thinking, right, we're expecting him to fly in the last week before the fight and be tired and jet lagged and all these things. They want all these things in their favor, and that's how they play these games. And then when they see then that I'm already there and I'm already fit and ready to go, then it's just like, oh, what do we need to do now? Well, okay, well, let's postpone this fight and let's give him no date. So he's sort of floating around. He doesn't know what's happening. He'll be sitting in a hotel over Christmas waiting for this new date while we're just pulling back on our training, or, you know, whether the fight's closer than I think it is, they're going harder when I've pulled back a bit, or whatever. You know, they want the odds in their favor all the time. I'm just the only person who says, let's do a fight. If anything, I'm too fair. And it's been my downfall. I'm Mr. Nice Guy. I've been Mr. Nice Guy because I think I'll just do whatever I need to do in the ring. And but that's not the way anything plays in boxing. It is what it is. It's a money game. And, you know, and they're always trying to get everything in their favor. And that just is what it is. So.
Yeah.
You ended up getting back after Christmas, didn't you?
I went and I did 2 weeks in quarantine, and I arrived home the day after, which was the 26th. But, you know, it was all good. We had Christmas Day that day. I didn't feel like I lost much of that.
Did they get back to you in the end about dates or anything? Did they
never.
Ever come back?
Nothing ever came back at that point. But while I was in quarantine, there was a talk of a fight between me and Tim Zhu. Before I had left, and I had turned down that fight to go over and fight the world title eliminator with Williams, which because I was on a contract to do and all of that anyway. So I honored my contract again. I'm a fair guy, so I honored that contract and I did that. It was so much easier for me to stay here and fight Tim. Him being world number one anyway, it's the next best thing to a world title eliminator. So I just said, look, I got to honor my contract, and I'll go over and I'll fight Williams. So anyway, when that fight wasn't happening, I said, right, enough of that. I've honored that contract now. I'm not getting anything back from these guys, so I'm just pushing on with what I'm doing. So when I was in quarantine, I'd already spoke to Paul and said, let's see if that fight's still on the table with Tim. So anyway, I was sitting there and I watched Tim. Tim had a fight. His next fight after Jeff Horn was a guy called something like Brownlee Morgan. And this guy was 20-1. And Tim just got in and absolutely destroyed him in like half a round. And I just sat there and there was a smile on my face going, okay, let's do it with him. So it's a weird thing. That's the way my psychology is. I always want, like, it's like when I was there the night that Munguia won the world championship. And he beat the guy who beat Miguel Cotto, who was a legend of the sport, knocked him over 4 times. And I was ringside. And I couldn't help but smile and say, let's get that guy. Like, let's actually win the world championship from him. Because I see it as a challenge. For right or wrong, whether good or bad it is or not, that's just the way my brain works. I want to win. I don't want to just win something. I want to win it in extreme fashion. And when I seen him get that win, I was like, we got to get him. Paul, we got to get him. And we got back on the phone to Paul. Paul got on to their guys and they got the deal done in 2 days. The deal was done in 2 days. So that deal was done before I left quarantine.
Wow.
Which was phenomenal, and I was very, very happy about that leaving. It put a spring in my step for the last 4 days in quarantine, so that was good.
That's good.
Yeah.
So what happens now? I mean, you know, there's always the people on the outside that look at boxing and don't really know a lot about it, and then the people on the inside who do understand the psychology of boxing and what happened. So the first, the Munguia one was, the WBO redid the points and said, okay, it was a draw. Then the one where you'd pushed up in weight with Charlo, which was, you know, I remember chatting with you, and I know I was very against it. I was like, dude, I don't think you should do that. I know you're one of these guys who's just like, you know,
up for any challenge.
Oh fucking hell! But
I love that, which I absolutely love.
But now with Chizu, what's the plan? We've been speaking, but if we're talking to GP, the general public, what's the plan? What happens now?
Well, okay, so basically, what happened obviously is I got into the fight, and you know, I was a heavy underdog, which I felt was very unfair. But I wasn't emotional about it or anything like that. I just think it was just silly. But for me and my belief in my skills and ability, You know, like that's where I am with all of that. I wasn't, you know, and through my own naivety, you know, I probably should have stepped back and had a bit of a tune-up fight because I hadn't fought for 15 months where Tim had, Tim had fought three times in that time. Yeah. And he'd had three TKOs and one of them was former world champion Jeff Horn, who beat Manny Pacquiao before. Yeah. You know, so there was that, right? But that didn't bother me anyway because I thought, oh, I'm training anyway, and I was training for a fight, but even though Wayne was saying, you know, let's just step back and have a tune-up fight, I was like, no, because I really just thought, like, I'm just going to beat Tim here. I really am just going to. And then, and you know what? Like, I feel like, and this sounds very fairy, not to you guys, but to some people listening, I get signs, you know, of when I'm on and when I'm not. And I was getting all these great signs, and it was just phenomenal. I was mind-blown. And then, in a sparring session, I'm boxing about 30 years now. In a sparring session, I get punched and my nose was nearly tickling my ear. I was like, what is that pain? And the guy, I just looked at my sparring partner. I actually have it on video. It's funny because I was recording it. And he's like, oh, your nose. Like, see, we walked back to the corner and my nose was like pointing that direction nearly. So I was like, oh, let's get out of the ring. And I went straight to this this place that my sponsor knows. That you just go in and pay 500 cash and you're seen straight away. And so he looked after that for me. A big, big shout out to Murray Thornton who did that. Got me straight in. They gave me a shot of morphine and an anti-inflammatory, which took that away. So they gave me a scan and I can show you the scan. But nose is just completely all the cartilage is detached from here. So you see, like, there's like a dent there. That's all, like, all over this side, which was pushed. And all up here is like a crack. Oh, this is now floating, kind of. It's not attached to there. So I was like, right, well, we have a decision to make. Do we press on with the fight or not? So I spoke to my, spoke to the guy, the specialist, and he said, look, you've completely destroyed your nose. So between now and the fight, it would be 80%. As good as it's going to be. He said, look, and I said, do you think more time would help? And he said, look, ask for more time if you can get it. But if you can't, he said, look, if it breaks again, we'll just straighten it again for you. He goes, I feel like I can do a better job than I did the last time. The cartilage is still off. He said, your nose can be straight again, but it will require an operation. But wait till you finish boxing. I'm like, great. So I said, so even in sparring, if it goes again, he goes, just come back in, put it back to you, just continue on. And so the thing about that, I had to really think about this because my coach in America, Wayne, was dead against it, which I don't know if I'm talking out of school here, but, you know, we sort of had a little bit of a thing there. But I just said, look, I'm going to beat Tim. So, like, I feel like I've got such a win over Tim here on this. He's world number one. You know, this saves me having to come and have two or three more fights to get back to this position. And worst case scenario, it goes in the fight. I've got to just overcome the pain and just do whatever it takes to win that fight. And
I mean, we'd had conversations about that as well. Because I know that, you know, I'd said to you, look, you've been... Everybody gets injured, but you know, we all get injured through our lives, but you heal at a particular rate and it is to do with what's going on inside of your head. And, you know how to handle this. You've got to listen to you, Dennis, you know?
Well, you know, conscious Dennis is one of the craziest people that you've ever met in your life. Yeah. I have literally no fear of anything apart from, you know, my kid's safety. Other than that, I literally just doesn't come across fear on me. So that's the one thing. But again, subconsciously, what did start to pop into my head in the last 2 weeks was, I remember lying on my bed after the weigh-in, just letting the food settle and start to feel good again energy-wise, was going, right, now that weight is made, I've got to now mentally prepare for one of the worst feelings in the world on your nose, right, in your face. Because when that broke, all around here, there's like a radius of this that just feels like there's a knife stuck in it. That's how your nerves react to it. It's not just there and there. It just your whole face just starts to feel this horrible. It's like dull and acute at the same time. It's weird. So I've thought, right, I've no problem dealing with that. I've dealt with it. But I don't know. Like, I've now got to pick myself up and not be a box while that's going on. So how do I deal with that? So there's a lot of subconscious stuff going on for me around that time. And not only that, I was really picking it up in sparring. So as I said, all my signs were going phenomenally good. When that happened, signs started to happen for me to go to the country. They were actually going against all the signs were happening. Like little signs, signs that you could interpret both ways, but there was a feeling going, maybe this is a sign for me now to just pull back and do it again. So we asked the promoters, can we have 4 weeks extra just to give Dennis more time? He has hurt his nose. They didn't believe that. They thought we were looking for more time to get Wayne over, which they had brought up, even in the press conference, which I actually said in the press conference, I really don't respect you guys questioning our integrity on that, because they were like, well, we don't know what was going on down, but they asked for more time. And then when I stood toe-to-toe with Zoo, he actually said to me, he goes, oh, your nose is wonky. You must have broke your nose. And I said, see, tell your promoters that. And they were standing right behind, and I said, see? And they were like, oh, okay. And they see my nose was actually wonky. At that point, I didn't care anyway. So it's just funny how that actually happened and that went on. But anyway, look, it was in my head too that we had missed 3 weeks of sparring when I was like going like right up. We had missed 3 weeks. Now, I had trained my ass off to try and make up for that, missing that sparring on the bag and everything else. Like the next morning, I was in doing strength and my whole face was kind of swollen all around here and everything. That's how it got out because people were saying, who spoke about the fact that your nose is broken in camp? And I was like, look, I had to show up to the gym to do my weights the next day. Yeah. You know, so, you know, anybody that sees me, even when I went for a coffee, I had heard that the person, the barista who made my coffee, his niece had told other people about it all within a day. So yeah. It got around quite fast because I'm pretty well known in the area. So, anyway, look, that's sort of what it was. I missed 3 weeks of sparring. I had to sort of start from the start again and build it up as quick as I could. I did the best that I could with it. And on the night I got in there, I had two great rounds of box, as good as I can. He was told after two rounds, you've lost those rounds. You need to step it up. And he had a great game plan. He went the body. He worked really hard. He was throwing good shots to the head. He had a cut on the second round, which I really went in for. I tried to really work his cut and open it up. And hopefully, and this sounds bad, but a lot of blood would get in his eye and it would sort of give him a blind spot that I could sort of work. At the same time, he was working my body and two good rounds. Come the end of the third round, it was still all to go for. Mm-hmm. But he was starting to slow. I was starting to gas a little bit. And the guy had said to me, he said, you're feeling it, aren't you? And I was just like, you know, I was. He said, right, this time, just get your body in position to start really loading up on your shots. Like, we got to hurt this guy now because he's building momentum. Even though he had a cut and I was winning, he was building momentum. So I did. I loaded up and I threw in some big shots. And he was able to block a few, but at the same time, he was able to walk through the rest of them. He was a full, you know, sort of like a tough Russian sort of a guy. Who had met that sort of a guy in the amateurs before, and they are tough. So, you know, he is his father's son, and he came out after that, and he had worn me down. I had very rarely ever felt that gassed in the ring, but to be gassed that early means he went the body. He done what he needed to do. He knew I was 15 months out of the ring. He knew I sort of had an upset camp, but that doesn't take away from his ability. I'm just going to sit here now and say he will be a world champion. And I'm not making any excuses. He's a great fighter. And, you know, and we've spoke since. And he said, he messaged me and said it was an honor to share the ring with me. And it was an honor to share the ring with him as well. And again, life just dealt me a blow. But before you guys ask me any more questions, I will say that I truly do believe that this was, it is still part of the plan. Like, I'm not one of those boxers that's over the hill, that's done, that's in there now getting hurt. Yeah. I do believe, you know, when me and Mitch sat down May of 2016 on the second seminar, we went over what would be, you know, my why and what I'm doing this for. And he got it out. And again, it was to be the greatest and best version of myself, inspire others to do the same. I went over a speech that I would deliver in a world championship fight. And I don't think that speech would ever mean as much to me If I had have won a world championship before now, with the fact that I've overcome all of these obstacles and everything has been put in front of me, for me to come back now and win a world championship is like something, you know, there's not like, it's like a Cinderella man story. And I think it's going to mean more dropping that speech in front of the world after coming through all of this.
I love that, Dennis. I really love that.
That is magic. So there's a plan going ahead, Dennis. We spoke today very privately, which is what plans need to be when in the boxing game. But I just feel that, you know, I think that this is, you know, I think the message for young and upcoming fighters, people who are, you know, look at you as
athletes at all.
Athletes at all. Look at you as someone who's just such an inspiration, and you know, you're so intelligent about how you do it. If you were going to speak to any of those young people that are out there that are moving through the ranks, I mean, what is your message to them? You know, what is your message to the athlete? What is your message?
Well, it's something that you guys taught me, and that's that nobody wakes up inspired to make your life great. Yeah, of course, you know, they'll want to come along and they'll help in certain ways, but I think that you've got to go after exactly what you want and how you want it to happen. That doesn't happen to fighters, and there's a lot of, you know, let's be fair, there's a lot of corruption in boxing. So you got to choose your moves wisely. You've got to be above it all. Like, you know, I have seen a couple of fighters who have just put their trust in their managers and this, that, and the other, and it's worked out good for them, right? But for the most part, for 95% of fighters, you cannot do that. You gotta be across everything. You gotta understand everything. Yeah. You gotta talk through something, and if somebody's not with you on it, you know, then maybe, you know, you gotta leave that space. But for a lot of fighters, I think what I'm doing is I'm showing that, you know, you gotta chase after that. Because if I hadn't have made some moves that I had made earlier in my career, you know, I would never have got the opportunities that I've gotten. I would have been sort of like a cash cow for certain promoters. I can sell a lot of tickets. So I'd be sitting around just doing that, making somebody else lining their pockets without, you know, all the opportunity that I've had. I've had that because I have that mindset of going harder and challenging and stuff like that. For, you know, there's negatives and positives to that, no doubt, but it's gotten me to where I am today, and I wouldn't change a bit of it. So also, like, I'm 36 years of age. There's some people in the boxing world that's it's known as sort of, okay, you're at the end of your career now. But like, I want to be that to show that it's not that, it's not age. It's like Mike Tyson said, you bring energy to the table, not age. I want to show that it's over when you think it's over. It's over when it's over for you. And it's only over when you give up. And so a lot of people would think now, right, Dennis has had his shots now, and that's probably it for him. Okay, but no, I've learned from that. And I've learned a lot from it. I'm coming right back. I'm having a domestic level fight in the next couple of months.
Right.
I'm building a back up to a world ranked fight, to a top five fight, and then I'll get my world championship again.
Yep.
And that's what I'm going all in on. Listen, I visualized a lot of stuff that I've happened. Like, just say, Tim being a Russian guy of Russian descent, and me getting I had a badly lacerated tongue from that fight as well, from that uppercut that you've probably seen on loop on Fox Sports. But they just had it on loop there one time. I was playing against the pool with a friend.
I find that very difficult to watch, Dennis.
I see myself getting knocked down like 10 times as I'm playing pool. But anyway, but look, the point I'm making there is look, you just overcome all of these things, and you pull it right back, and you go again. So I know that it's in me, and I just can't wait to go and do it. The point I was making there was Russian. Tim is a Russian guy, and I ended up with a mouth injury. So I've been speaking a long time about my story, like that it took me 10 years to be an Irish champion in the sport. Right? I didn't give up and I got there. I also spoke about my first call up for the Irish elite team, which was Ireland versus Russia. And I fought a guy, I think it was the Russian military team. And I fought a guy who I didn't feel was any better than I was. But after the fight, my teeth were loose. That tooth was loose. The rest of them were kind of loose, but this one I could move. All in under here was all kind of crushed in. My eye was sticking out of my face, like really far out. And I was concussed for 2 days. It was one of probably two or three concussions I've had in my whole life. And I remember telling that story to anyone. If they talk about Russian fighters. But the problem with me telling that story was I've manifested it again in Tim. I fought a guy, he was Russian. Tim is not a better fighter than me. And my skill ability is larger than his. He just was punching as hard as that other guy was. Whether that be genetics or anything else, I don't know. But that's what happened. And I had bad mouth injury from it as well. So I've manifested that. But that's the negative in that. I've manifested lots of stuff by telling my stories. But the positive in all of that is my story that I'm telling about achieving my goals after 10 years of being an amateur. All the things that I do finally achieve because I don't give up. And that's what I think we're about to see now. That's what I feel like we're about to see. Yep. The positive in all of this. I've manifested the negative. I'll also manifest the positive as well. So yeah. I'm ready to be a world champion.
Everything turns full circle. Listen, Dennis, it's always great getting on the on and having a chat with you.
It was so good having a chat. You know, if nothing else, you've got an amazing little Oliver, Mitch's little boy, runs around in his little boxer briefs, and he's like, "I'm Dennis
Hogan."
He has his little green shirt.
He leaps out of the wardrobe and tries to punch me in the nuts as often as he possibly can. and he's got a great left hook on him. I can tell you what.
That's brilliant. Can I just say, the feeling I get when people tell me stuff like that is actually more than what it's going to feel like, you know, to just be the world champion. It's going to be that sort of those kind of stories. And, you know, and I'll just say before I get off, even though I've had a loss again at that very, very top level, you know, I've gone on to, I finally went on to my messenger, which is just blocked up and in my inbox messages. And the messages that I have gotten from people about being inspiration and all of that, like literally brings a tear to my eye. Yeah. And I'm a little bit robotic when it comes to, I'm very stoic when it comes to emotion. But that stuff can really genuinely make me cry and make shit feel like it's worth it. So, you know, I truly am blessed to be able to do that. And if I can... can you help Oliver in any way do more damage to you?
I love it.
Yeah, next time we're back in Bali or we're back over there and I have him with you, you can teach me another couple of things.
I'd love to join you in Bali again as well.
Of course.
Thank you so much, Dennis, for your time. We love you. You know that.
I need you. You do. Much love. Thank you. Take care. See you. Bye-bye.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.